everybody. Welcome to the Dual Screens Gamescast. I am one of your hosts, Stephen Fontana, and with me in one of these other boxes is Andy Asimakis. How are you, Andy?
I feel a little off today, Stephen.
Oh my God.
I'm not sure what's going on today. Oh. Like, I woke up, I got out of bed, mm-hmm. as one does. I brushed my teeth.
Right.
I read some lines from the Necronomicon. Uh-huh. I feel a little strange.
Something in there is a misstep. Now, you brushed your teeth, you took your morning piss, and you read a, what was it?
Some lines from the Necronomicon.
I think that might have been your issue. That seems a little out of the ordinary. You seem a little hoarse. Take a lozenge.
And
with us is a brand new member of the Dual Screens family. He is Taylor Allen, a.k.a. It's Purger, at twitch.tv/It's Purger. Welcome, Purger. How are you? How's it going?
Hello. Thank you for adopting me into your family.
Yes, it cost us a lot of money, and you are therefore on watch, sir. Taylor's cool. Already been producing incredible content for us here at Dual Screens. Already has a first play up, already has a video review up, and there's much, much more to come, and he's bringing a lot of enthusiasm, and we have him here now on Gamescast at least a couple of times. I don't know if it's going to be a permanent thing. It's really up to scheduling, and we're going to be reshuffling the deck, as it were, for 2021, so we'll see what that brings. But speaking of bringing you, we have shepherded you all to here to twitch.tv/dualscreenstreams. And if you don't know what the Dual Screens Gamescast is, it's very simple. It's the internet's number one gaming news podcast, starring now three people you've never heard of, probably. The Gamescast posts each and every Monday for your listening pleasure on your podcast service of choice, including our home Podbean. And of course, you can watch the video demand on youtube.com/dualscreenstreams. TV. We're on iHeartRadio. We're on Spotify. We're on iTunes. Or Apple Podcasts, whatever. We're on Google Play. We're on Stitcher. We're on FM radio. We're everywhere, brah. We're everywhere. And of course, we're on dualscreens.com, where you can get everything. Consider leaving us a review if you listen on Apple Podcasts, because it helps with that whole algorithm thing. And we have been getting a few new reviews lately, and we're very, very appreciative of that. All right. Before we get into this week's show, Andy, we have other shows, and one of those shows is our flagship show. That's our interview podcast called the Dual Screens Podcast. That's an interview show where we bring on an industry guest to tell us their story. It is the internet's number one indie developer interview podcast, starring us, probably also, most likely. Andy, tell our listeners about this past show.
Oh, we had on Fossil Games, and we talked about Sunshine Manor. Mm-hmm. Which is an indie horror game that you should all check out. There's a free demo on Steam called The Sunshine Manor Prelude. It's about a 20-minute demo. It's got gorgeous pixel art, and it was a great conversation I had with Paul of Fossil Games. So check it out.
It is one of those games where looks are deceiving.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Like 1,000,000%. So yeah, check that one out. Again, episode 2 of Casting Call is out there. So if you want to take a look at that, go to our YouTube page. Again, that's youtube.com/dualscreenstv. And if you want to support us on Patreon, go to patreon.com/NDS podcast, just like our two Patreon producers, FNH Paul and Colton the Apprentice Nestler. We cannot continue to grow without all of your support. And remember, $1 gets you a bonus episode in which you vote the topic and you get invited into our VIP Discord channel, where you can hang out with us, each other, and our indie dev guests. Yeah, so if you want to support us, go do that. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for everybody's favorite future t-shirt. The Adventures in Gaming. We are going to start with our guest, with our new member. Taylor, what have you been playing?
I need you to make up your mind. Am I a guest? Am I a new member?
You're a guest on this show, but a member of Dual Screens.
That I understand.
Correct. Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, the Necronomicon is back.
So a couple things I've been playing. First, new review up on dualscreens.com, the Angry Video Game Nerd 1 and 2 Deluxe.
Indeed.
I've been playing that on my Switch. That game is hard as balls, but it is very fun, especially if you like potty humor. I have been playing Partisans 1941, which is a like real-time squad-based strategy game set on the Eastern Front of World War II. It's very cool. I like that game a lot. I want to play more of it. I've only played the first couple of missions. Game is also hard as balls.
And you have a first play that just went up today on youtube.com/dualscreenstv. It's almost an hour long. Like, that first mission took you almost an hour, and that was not like your lack of skill or whatever. Like, the game is pretty meaty. A couple of questions I do have for your limited time with it is, you know, these games, you know, you see a lot of these types of games now popping up, these isometric, these, you know, point and click kind of our action RPG games. You know, we just, Baldur's Gate 3 comes to mind, and but you, it's hard for something to kind of like stand above the rest in a way.
Yeah.
What do you think the Partisans at this point, at your first few clicks in, what's it bringing new to the table? Is it just like the atmosphere? Is it the setting that hooked you? What's hooking you so far?
Yeah, so with Partisan so far, I really like the settings. We lost Perger.
I can still hear him 100%.
Did I lose his audio? Hold on.
Did you lose both of our audio?
I lost both of your audio. Okay, continue.
Okay, cool.
Continue.
So I really love the setting. I love history, especially around the World Wars. So that really hooked me right off the bat.
Sure.
And it's not like your typical Western Front, you know, D-Day, you know, American gung-ho fighters winning the war type thing. Your squad are Soviet insurgents that are behind enemy lines, basically. So you kind of have to like sneak around and avoid detection from the Nazis. And it's honestly really cool. The setting is one that isn't explored a lot in different forms of media. You know, like I said, they typically focus on like D-Day and kind of that same World War II story. So I really like that a lot. I like that it's real time. It's similar to a game like XCOM or something like that. And I even mentioned this in the first look, where, you know, it's squad based, you have different pieces of equipment and things like that that you're getting for your people, you have different abilities that you can use, but it's all real time, it's not turn based. So,
gotcha.
If you get spotted, it's not like that enemy will take a turn and then you can kind of move and line yourself up. If you are running from one cover to another, the enemies are going to return fire and they are going to hit you, and very likely they're going to kill you. So it's all about positioning your teammates in real time, or around the different kind of play spaces that these encounters take place in. And so it gets very strategic in that you want to make sure that not only are you good for the initial point of contact, that you're able to, you know, kind of take on those enemies head on, but then you can kind of predict where they're going to move and take cover and be able to flank them without getting yourself killed as well. So it kind of takes an extra level of thinking that a game like XCOM doesn't. Mm. And I find that really enjoyable. So it's cool. Really cool.
What else you been playing?
So over on my Twitch channel, I had a community channel points goal, which they hit for me to play scary games. And for those of you that know me, know I absolutely hate anything spooky, scary whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't enjoy the rush of like being scared. And so I started playing Alien Isolation because it was the scariest game I could think of, because I hate myself.
That's fair.
And that game is the absolute worst. But it's even worse when I have people in my chat trolling me and like playing scare alerts and stuff. So I've been jump scared probably 3 dozen times in the like 4 or 5 hours that I've played that game.
That sounds familiar.
And only one or two of them have been from the actual game. but that game does such a good job of creating like a very tense environment that those jump scares work, because you have no idea where the alien is. The AI design in that game is so smart. And I know it's not anything new. People have been, you know, singing praises of Alien Isolation for years. But the design in that game just makes every single environment, even when you know you're safe, feel incredibly tense, because you have no idea when the alien's going to like drop through a vent or just, you know, take the person that you're talking to on the other side of the glass and rip them into a dark hallway or something. So
it's pretty
that
cool.
Has been the absolute worst, and I don't look forward to playing that game ever again.
All right, you got one more here on your list. One that's kind of taken everybody by storm recently.
Yes. So the last game that has really been pulling me in is Hades. I played that game initially when it came out in beta almost a year ago. And I enjoyed it. There were only like two or three weapons at the time, and the environments all felt kind of samey. And decided to jump back into it once they went 1.0. And I have fallen absolutely in love with this game. I love roguelike games, you know, games like Dead Cells and things like that. So this was right up my alley. But just the amount of style in Hades, the like visceral and impactful nature of the combat, all of the unique builds that you can do with the different boons and weapon upgrades that you can get. That game just has like systems on top of systems, and it slowly unlocks each of them. And it's super cool. I've said it a couple of times on my stream, but as of right now, I think Hades is my game of the year. The game is just absolutely incredible.
All right, Andy, what do you got going on?
Well, I did dive into the demo of Age of Calamity on Nintendo Switch, Hyrule Warriors. And I was thoroughly impressed with it. It's got a lot of production value for a Switch game. And I like how you can actually retain your save data when the full game comes out not too far from now. It's kind of a nice thing. I think I wish more games would do that. And it got me thinking, does Nintendo only do these demos anymore for their huge first party games? I've seen nothing on, because we get a lot of Microsoft as early access / it's on Game Pass and we're working that kind of a thing. I see no Sony like huge first party demos coming out on their system, but Nintendo does this very often, putting their big titles as a demo first on the Switch. Is it just me? Is that a thing?
Honestly, you've noticed? Kind of, but at the same time, like, I'm going to be completely honest. Since I got a PC that I enjoy actually playing on, I had like the Switch is no longer my indie machine. It's switched over to PC. Like, so one of the disadvantages of the Nintendo Switch just in general is from a PR and publisher standpoint, is it is nearly infinitely more impossible. My smoke alarm's going mental.
Yeah, I just heard that.
I'm going to go check it. It's just being weird.
Someone's in your house. So, yeah, until Steven gets back, I'll talk more about this. I'll talk more about this game.
It fell off the wall earlier today when I closed the door. And I think the battery's just not good. Anyway, It's so much harder to get codes for Switch games when there's also a Steam code available for like review or play. So I've been denied a code for Switch games that I am instantly approved for Steam. So like I've just been defaulting to Steam now to get Steam codes. So like I've just been playing more indie games on there. Like anytime I get a code, I mean, that's what I've been given out. Mm-hmm. Only our really good relationships, the PR people that we have really good relationships on, you know, like or the devs that have been on the show, they'll bump us up the list a little bit for those Switch games. But it's just that's really, I haven't been paying attention to Nintendo. Like they haven't had that game I really am dying to play since Animal Crossing, and you know that lost me after maybe like I don't know 2 months. But it was great. I had a lot of fun with it, but they haven't really had that title for me. And I still have games that I still haven't even gotten through and finished and that I need to get back to. But man, for as much as I played that Switch in its first 2 years, like I fell off big time when I got the PC.
Right. So that's fair. I understand that it happens. But yeah, this game, I feel if you like Musou games, those like, you know, Tecmo Warriors kind of a bashing 1,000 enemies at one situation.
Yeah.
It just odd playing a game like this when there's no jump button and you want to jump.
Yeah.
But it's your dash and it feels like off to me. You have to like have prompts to jump off of like enemies or off of a wall or a fence. It just feels strange not having an actual built-in jump button. But I think this game, branding it as a Breath of the Wild prequel, was the most genius thing Nintendo could have done for it. Because now it's like a bit more genuine. Now it's woven into that whole lore and they get you hyped for the actual sequel coming out. God knows when that's going to be.
Are they like saying that this is like when the calamity happened? Like this is like the invasion of the calamity. So
it starts with like Link as a knight fighting during the war.
That's pretty cool.
It's like you're not bad at killing things. You should, you know, do that more for us and with an actual title and be better at it. And here's Impa that people know and love from Zelda, and she's also badass. So yeah, it's really good. I enjoyed it a lot.
Okay.
I also been playing a bit of Visage. Visage, which is it Visage or Visage? Because Mirage, it's not Mirage. That's just weird to me. So I've been playing Visage. It is if you in any way liked PT, you have to get this game.
It's right up Taylor's alley.
It is 100% built.
No, sir.
From the foundation of what made PT a great horror experience.
So it's got you all hot and bothered.
Dude, so it opens up with this guy in a first-person view loading a gun in a dark room. It's very dimly lit.
Sure.
And he has some bullets on the table and he's loading a revolver slowly. And you see one person off to his side tied up and like struggling and trying to scream, but they're all gagged up. And then as he loads the gun with four bullets, you see the camera pans and you see three more people in total are in that room, all gagged and bound behind a chair.
No, I don't like this.
So he takes them out one at a time. And then the final shot for himself and you hear the boom and it's like splash title Visage. And it's like, okay, now you have my attention, game. This is off to a great start. It looks like a family murder suicide situation from what I gather.
Oh, I don't like that at all.
And you are in this house. It's a huge house. It's raining outside a lot like PT. And the main gameplay loop is you have what's called a sanity meter that kind of acts in the background. If you stand in the dark for too long, you lose your sanity. You have to keep being in lit places, but the lights go out, bulbs break, you have to repair them. Or find candles and light those, but the candles burn out eventually. And if your sanity goes down, you hallucinate. You see shit. You hear noises.
I like that.
And it tells you off the bat, this is a hard game. Really hard. So be patient with it. And it's all about resource management. I'm about like an hour and a half in. I am loving it. Loving it so far.
Now,
so good. So fucking good.
I want to get back to something that Mr. Nuff says in the chat. Mr. Nuff says, the reason you don't like your Switch anymore is because you can't get free games. LOL, come on. No, I love my Switch. It's the reason why I'm playing more on my PC, which is the words I actually said. Nice job, Buzz. Is Buzz running the Mr. Nuff's account? Is that what's happening? I absolutely love my Switch. I just don't play it as much because it used to be my indie machine, and that's why I played it so much. But it's much harder to get a lot of those indies, especially the ones we like to cover. So push to you, sir. Push to you. So I have been playing a couple of games this week. You know, a lot of the usual suspects I play, you know, the games I've been playing, but we did play a little bit more of Ghost Legends. I think that mode is fantastic. You know, the raid is now out. I'm not up to the power level yet for that. Cause I've only been playing it one day a week, but I should probably double that. But that's just a fantastic mode. I played more Phasmophobia. I played that as Hollywood Hulk Hogan Batchild on my stream. So if you want to, I actually bleached. I had a full beard. I shaved it down just to the Fu Manchu, the big old Hulk Hogan Fu Manchu. And I actually bleached the Fu Manchu for an hour, and it was beautiful blonde. I made a bandana, put Batchild on it in the Hollywood writing. I had my new Twitch order t-shirt that I cut up all nice, and I was screaming, and I definitely got at least two strikes on my channel for nipples, because inadvertently nipple slips.
No, so that's not fun.
Those are definitely happening. I mean, if the algorithm might not be able to see them, because I do have tiny little penny nipples, but... Well, I guess we'll see. We'll see what happens on the channel. Maybe that whole stream gets taken down. But man, Phasmophobia, I'm sorry. The more I play it, I mean, yes, it could be terrifying. It could be silly as hell. It's janky, but it's just so much fun being a paranormal investigator. Like they're taking like what we watched on those stupid TV shows, and they make it so much fun. It just works. The systems just work. The game's getting a little bit better as they're patching it, and I can't wait. I joined their Discord, and I put in some suggestions for the game. And one of them I had was one of the suggestions they're looking for is what to do with players when they die. Because when you die, you become a ghost and you just kind of run around. But there's nothing you can do. You can't interact with anything. You can just follow everybody. You can't even see the ghost in the ghost world. Like there's really nothing. So I thought a really cool thing would be to have three things that the ghosts can do, but only you could only do one of them as the ghost, and you can only do it once. So there's a three, because there's groups of four, and only three of you can die and still be ghosts while one person's running around. So I figure, okay, three tasks you do. It's a one and done situation, so you're not abusing it. And so I was like, all right, one thing could be like a ghost writing, like you write on the wall, like a message with your mouse, like really quick. Maybe you have just a few seconds where you could write a message on the wall. The other thing is that the ghost will shut and lock doors when it's going on a hunt to kill you. So maybe when they do that, one of the actions you can do is unlock one door once. So you could basically save them from a hunt. You could unlock the door and open it for them or whatever. I forget what the other one was. Oh, the other one was picking up an item that they drop somewhere and putting it somewhere else. So like, let's say they have a camera in a bad spot, or they drop their flashlight or whatever, like they're just using a bunch of items. Maybe you could pick it up and put it by the front door for them so that they don't have to go all the way through the house to get something. And it was the most downvoted suggestions in that entire Discord.
Wow.
Everybody shit all very, over it.
Very fucking unpopular, it seems.
It got out. It instantly got one.
Did they ban you from the fucking channel?
No. It instantly got two. Like, it had two thumbs up. It had like 13 thumbs downs and like five X's, which I don't even know what that means. I think it means get rid of this. This is so bad. Just get it off the fucking thing.
They're gonna dox you and come to your house and murder you.
I'm quite nervous about it, if I'm gonna be honest.
Wow. Those sound like actually not bad suggestions.
I thought they'd be kind of fun, but whatever.
What was the debate though? Did they even express why they were bad ideas?
So they don't even discuss it. Now, if it gets enough thumbs up, it gets pulled into the official.
I see.
The official suggestion, like, and the devs will talk to you about it. It just failed. It was like, done.
Crash and burn.
And then somebody was like, what if audio was louder? And they're like, thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up, thumbs up. Like, okay, yeah, cool.
What if the ghosts came in different colors?
What if the ghosts were also male and female? What if there are two ghosts?
Woo, what if you spooky. Did? What if it's like, what if it's a cast but they're friendly ghosts? Do that.
Mm-hmm.
Put Casper in there.
Speaking of spooky ghosts and stuff, Taylor and I, even though you don't like spooky games, we played the first couple of missions of Rundown 4 of GTFO this week as well.
Yes, sir, we did. And oh my god, I love this game.
We kicked that game's ass, but I'm gonna be honest with you folks. That game does not stream well at all, because there's a lot of slow movement and nerdy coordination. I feel like it's like watching, like, I can't even explain it. It's there's not a lot of action happening, you know? So it's not, there's not a whole lot. There's just like these little snippets of action, but actually playing the game is infinitely more fun. Just being in that atmosphere and looking around and trying to figure out. So if you don't know what rundowns are in this game, they're essentially, they reset the entire game every few months. Mm-hmm. And the rundown is literally you're running down these different levels to get to the final level and to complete the quote rundown. And each level gets harder, and it's not as simple as, you know, clear all the enemies. They're almost like little mini raids. They're like mini puzzles where you kind of have to say, okay, we need to find these keys. That's the whole objective, is finding the keys. But you have no idea where the keys are. But you could use a terminal to make get a list of all the items on the floor. You get a list of the items. Now you could actually do a search for those items, and you find out which rooms they're in. So now you go to those rooms, and now you're like, okay, where the fuck is this item? So you could ping the item, and then it'll ping. And like, but there's different orders of the doors that you can go in. You're kind of trying to figure out. And all of this while you have very limited resources. So you have to plan for when these enemies are going to be attacking you, or like how many of them can you take out stealthily so you're not wasting ammo or health packs or whatever. And it's all about trapping and luring. And like, it's almost like if it's almost kind of like Monster Hunter, if the in a sense where you're trying to get to this to this main objective while kind of traversing this area, but it's obviously much more terrifying because of you know how limited your resources are. But there's like that MacGuffin at the end of the line that you're just trying to figure out how to get it, how to learn its behaviors. But except the thing that you're learning is the level itself. It's all the doors interact with each other and like all the different rooms and stuff.
Interesting.
It's hard too, because even though the layout is the exact same for each level in the rundown, each level is not the same, but the levels stay static. So like level A1,
it's not procedurally generated
layout. But okay. All of the enemies, all of their placements, all of the item locations, all of the lootable gear that you can get, all of that is randomly generated. And so if the key is in this one room, in one rundown, you die, you wipe, you have to start over, it's not going to be in that exact same spot, and you may have to face completely different enemies to get to where the key is the next time around. And so it's constantly like changing, so you can't just create like a routine or a pathway that you follow to most efficiently complete these.
Yeah, as you get further and further in, like there's they just get way more difficult. Like watching people play the game or looking at like the complexity of it, you know, some of these levels can take you 2, 3, 4 hours. I think the first one that we did, the first one went pretty smoothly because you all played it before. But the first one that we all did kind of like together from scratch, I think was the second one of the rundown three. And that took us like almost like 2 hours, 2.5 hours. And that's just one level. And there's like 7 or 8 of them in a complete rundown. And they're just doing such a great job with that game. And the fact that it's basically like Left 4 Dead, but on hardcore mode with like environmental puzzles where you're trying to figure out kind of how to complete the level, but they change every few weeks. Like they have a whole new rundown. I forgot exactly how long rundown three was. I think it was like 2 months, but and it's like a whole new game, all different environments, all different quests to go. Some of the monsters are pretty much the same, at least in the first couple levels that we did, but it's pretty cool. Anyway, we real late on this one.
Taylor,
you can finish up.
Oh, I was just gonna say they also like cycle out weapons and stuff too, so it always keeps things
really interesting.
Cool and interesting. Yeah.
All right, it's time to get into our indie news update. Before, let's do a quick minute of Apex. Ladies and gentlemen, season 7 is right around the corner. It is 2 days away. And let me tell you, this new character is awesome. Gravity manipulation, going to be tossing gravity grenades, and like she's basically Ratchet and Clank, the character in Apex Legends. New map, Olympus, looks incredible. Bright, vibrant, very modern, not broken down and blown up and like fragmented all over the place. It looks to be much more cohesive, and I don't want to say small, but it looks contained. It's less wild. There's less, it's more of like a city. It's a futuristic city in the clouds, type situation. I can't wait. I'm so excited for that. I know Big Mikey Kirsch over there in the chat, Dr. Kirsch, is very excited, and I cannot wait to get into that. All right, Andy, let's take us into the indie news update. What do you got, Handsome?
This was like borderline hype, like most of these news segments in this category, but right. I gave it a good look and it was too cool to ditch in the hype zone.
Okay.
We're getting a brand new Game Boy game.
Oh my.
That's right. It's an actual physical Game Boy game from a studio called Spacebot Interactive. It's a turn-based combat RPG known as Dragonborn, and it looks fucking amazing.
Okay.
Yes. This will cost you a whopping $55. It's only for the Game Boy. There's no digital version of this, not on the Switch or PC or any other system.
Mm-hmm.
It is specifically for your Game Boy.
Sure.
And it will work for your Game Boy. Now, it's a bit of a high price tag for me, but I watched it, the trailer, and I was like, yeah, I think I'm going to have to pre-order this thing because it just looks too good. And you can tell by the way it was developed and the packaging. It was a pure passion project, and I got to support this thing. But I think at some point down the line, this has to be on the Switch as a digital release, or at least on Steam, because for all this work and to not get a lot of sales, it would break my heart. But look at it. It's, how do you resist this?
That does look really cool. That sprite work is ridiculous.
Yeah. How do you not buy this monochrome wonder?
Yeah. I mean, this looks awesome. This looks like it was built on like a Pokemon engine.
Yeah. And that's going to go right in the chat for folks to
see. That legitimately looks like it was built on the Pokemon engine. No, that looks awesome. That's great. I love when that's... And you know who they're getting with this? They're getting collectors that have
the
complete Game Boy collection. They're going to be like, well, I'm buying this because my collection, I can't do it.
There's one more for you.
It is time now to get into the dual screens report. And our first story, we're going to kick it over to Taylor. Taylor, what's our first story in the dual screens report?
Yeah, story number one, Xbox comes out next week.
Essentially,
there you
yeah.
go, Buzz.
Yes.
There it is. There's Moving nothing on. To read. most of the Xbox news was like what's coming out on Games with Gold, what's coming out to Game Pass. People, reports of PS5s and Xboxes, Series Xs, they're not, a lot of the information still embargoed, so there's still not a ton of news on that front to really talk about. They're not talking about their games outside of some other things that we're going to talk about as well. But Andy and I were having a conversation about what we're going to do for Xbox Next Gen, because it comes down to a situation of return on investment, right? Because we do cover everything. We cover all games. We've been accused many times of not covering Xbox to the point where we probably should, but that's mostly because, you know, I don't own an Xbox. What I own is a PC and Game Pass Ultimate. Like that's the way I play, and I have the you know, the xCloud and all that stuff. That's kind of how I'm experiencing Xbox. The interesting question that I want to raise for discussion is that enough to be considered in the Xbox ecosystem now, or are we still in the era of you need one of these two next-gen consoles to really be considered kind of in the know of when it comes to the Xbox product? Because I'm not going to be able to sit here and review the console. I'm not going to be able to give impressions of the console's UI, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But every game that comes out for it, I'm going to be able to play at equal specs for the most part, you know, at least maybe in a few months when I start upgrading a couple of components. For the most part, I'll be able to play in that same vein. But yeah, Andy and I were discussing whether or not, you know, we should use some of our stored little
Our
war chest that we would have spent pretty much all year if we were allowed out of the house,
right?
You know, conventions and whatnot, but we weren't allowed, so we're kind of just sitting on it. But I was like, I don't know if it's worth it. Like, is that so? I want to throw that. And since Taylor, this is your sort of story,
yeah.
And you actually approached us about our lack of Xbox coverage, but I don't even know if you're getting an Xbox.
Yeah. So, I'm not at launch, but I'm also not getting a PS5 because I'm getting a baby instead. but I would like to get at least a Series S because I feel like even though I have Game Pass and I absolutely love Game Pass and will evangelize that to literally anyone that asks, I want to kind of experience that ecosystem more. I played 360 a ton. I never owned a PS3. And I jumped over to PS4 with this last generation because there were more games that kind of spoke to me. But I really do like the Xbox ecosystem and kind of miss being a part of that. So I do eventually want to get an Xbox and a PS5 as well. But, you know, it just depends on, you know, funds and stuff with the baby and things like that. But I very much want to kind of like lead the discussion on Xbox news, even if I'm not necessarily playing on the new box.
Hmm. Well, a brand new PS5 will weigh, as an actual baby, if not more so.
Oh, no, it's more.
And
it's more.
And it will cost you a lot less in the long run. So things to consider.
That, as a matter of fact, your baby has already cost you more than what the PlayStation 5 will cost you.
Hey, I haven't been billed anything yet, so I'm off to a hot start. No, they bill us all at the end.
Oh, boy.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting topic because I feel the hardware is one thing that we could all see. Like, how well did Microsoft handle this new piece of hardware into next gen? But how long is that conversation going to last when it's all down to what the games are? And if I'm playing all those on my PC, is it worth the investment? It's a high price tag for some people too.
No, I mean, not as much as it would be a PC to get into it, but
right.
You know, especially with the Series S out there, which is sounding more and more intriguing as time goes on, because like, I don't even think I would even care about running a 4K machine, like a 1440 machine at you know, 60 frames or 120 frames in some cases, sounds pretty intriguing to me. Mm-hmm. But what I'm wondering is, not even from an existential like dual screens coverage problem, but more of a question of what is Xbox next gen. I don't think you could leave out PC gaming from that conversation because of how much work these last 3.5 years Xbox has put into distancing itself from console gaming.
Well,
making console gaming the end also of the conversation.
We gotta see what a next gen game looks like from them first before we can actually define that in Microsoft's category, because it's all cross gen for a little bit, so we can wait for that conversation.
Well, again, you're defining generation as a marked improvement of just graphical fidelity or whatever. They themselves are not treating generations the same way anymore. Like they have kind of moved their own goalpost in a sense, where it's not about what does this next console do. It's about what does Xbox the brand do going forward, and it is being as many places as possible. It is xCloud. It is, you know, getting things running on,
you know,
Samsung refrigerators. You know what I mean? Like, it's not. You know,
yeah. So that reminds me, there was a bit of news not too long we could discuss in the same category. That's Phil Spencer said he's not against getting Game Pass on a Switch or a PS4.
Sure.
I think that hints at the long game here.
Right.
For Microsoft.
I mean, if you look at any interview that Phil Spencer's done over the last 2.5-3 years, he very much alludes to that very thing that you're talking about, Steve. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't view PlayStation as their direct competition anymore. Mm-hmm. It's Amazon and it's Google, because they're focused more on building a network and an infrastructure of gaming rather than putting out the next box and the next group of games. So I think you hit right on the head, Steve. Like,
yeah,
the strategy is the Xbox brand wherever you play it.
Right. And the weird thing is like, if I'm playing on, if any of us are playing on PC, and that PC isn't the definitive experience of that game, are we doing a disservice to Xbox coverage at that point? If we're saying, hey, we're playing Halo 6, Halo Infinite on our PC, which isn't, it's not at ultra settings, but the Series X is playing this at like whatever fucking thing they're gonna say, 4K 60, whatever, I don't know. Is that a disservice to it, like, or just covering it in that way? That's the interesting question that we have, that we need to figure out in the next few weeks, because I'd rather get it sooner rather than later at that point, even though there's those generation defining games are not going to be here for at least, you know, 18 months as they themselves have said. So we'll see.
And that's also in a sense saying, let's say you review those games on your Android phone with xCloud.
Right.
It's even bigger disservice to those games.
Well, that's another thing, like, you know, saying, okay, this is the new Xbox game. This was reviewed on a PC. Mm-hmm. with a, you know, 2060 Super.
Right.
What is that in value to you? You're probably not going to give a shit if the game was reviewed on that. You're going to want to see what the game reviewed on the biggest, sexiest hardware. And the other crazy thing is most people still to this day, most people aren't even going to have a TV ready to be running a 4K 60 frame, you know, per second console. Like most people, it's a fact. Most people don't have those TVs. So does that even matter at this point? It's just a weird conversation to have. It's just they're redefining what it means to be, you know, a brand in general. So it's just going to be an interesting conversation. Speaking of interesting conversations, Nintendo did some stuff, Andy. They're in the news.
Yeah, they actually did a thing recently, and I was shocked to my very core. We got the final Nintendo Direct of the year, Direct Bini Partner Showcase, and it was a little juicy.
Yeah, this one had some good stuff in it.
Right, and I think one of the biggest things out of this that shocked me was Control as a cloud-only game on the Nintendo Switch.
Yeah.
Which, when you think about it, it could only work as a cloud game because this game, even on the PS4 Pro, had some stuttering issues because it was just a lot of crap happening at one time on the screen.
I honestly, the more I think about it and the more I've played other games, mm-hmm. I just think that it was just poorly optimized. Because even on its PC ports, like the first few patches were still, it just ran like garbage. Mm-hmm. I just think it was poor optimization. I think it probably needed another 6 months to a year mm-hmm. to like cook.
Oh yeah.
But it is what it is.
Yeah. We also got, again, the announcement of Hyrule Warriors demo.
Yep.
Which is out right now, so please go enjoy that. Immortals Phoenix Rising coming to the Switch on December 3rd. Hell yeah. Bravely Default 2. Oh my god. This was the one thing I was very excited about because I love that series on the DS, on the 3DS, and seeing it like on the Switch with higher res graphics and models and that same charm that made those games so great in your handheld, it's like it's back, better than ever, and I can't wait for it. Story of Seasons, Pioneers of Olivetown. Okay, it's a little bit of a farming game. Make your own farm. It was cute, you know. I'm not going to knock it.
Looks all right.
It was up there. No More Heroes 3 coming out next year for the Switch. But we got a surprise with No More Heroes 1 and 2 are available now on the Switch. So
a few people playing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another cloud game, Hitman 3. Also on the cloud. So first time for Hitman series coming on the Switch. And it's on the cloud. So there's that.
I'm confused. I'm just a little bit confused. It's just my ignorance on the whole cloud thing. Sure. Is this a Nintendo-based cloud gaming service, or is this the third parties are kind of left to themselves to do this?
Well, I'm trying to think. When we had Resident Evil 7, which was a Japan-only cloud game, do you recall that from way back when?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think Capcom manage that whole thing on their end. I think this is Nintendo's.
That sounds
part.
Familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. So,
because I wonder, like, how this is, like, who they partnered with, like, what? Because it's like a sneaky, you know, like it's just mm-hmm. a sneaky way of getting into the cloud gaming sphere without making like mm-hmm. a big deal out of it. They're just like, we're not calling it anything.
Yeah,
it doesn't have a fancy name.
It's just the cloud version. That's all it is. Yeah.
That's interesting. It's a weird way of doing things. It's a Nintendo. They're going to do weird things.
Of course.
What else we got on here?
Speaking of weird, part-time UFO from the creators of Kirby. That looked all sorts of cute. And I like seeing that studio do things other than Kirby because they're a very talented group of people.
Yep.
And those last two Kirby games we got, those like online only, remember those ones?
Yeah,
it's like you and some friends online and you bash enemies and you level up. And
then there was the Smash Brothers Kirby game that recently
came. So it's nice seeing them move away from Kirby for a little bit and try a whole different thing. And this looked interesting. What else we got here? Tropico 6.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. On Nintendo Switch. Bakugan comes out November 3rd.
We love that Bakugan.
And Grifflands, Nintendo Switch edition. It's a deck-building roguelike game.
Yeah, it is.
Cool. So, yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Solid, I would say.
Indeed.
To end the year.
All right. So, I'm going to get into this next little story here. Unless anybody has anything to say. Taylor, did you check out the mini direct? Pique your interest?
I didn't, because similar to you, Steve, I barely touch my Switch.
Man.
Well, I know you played AVGN on that bad boy.
We got to get you guys some more Switch codes, because the Switch needs more love.
Indeed. Indeed. Well, I mean, we just need some more like AAA style games on there, like, to really catch my interest. I want a reason to keep it with me, you know?
Wait till Metroid Prime 4 comes out 5 years from now, then you play it again.
I mean, that's definitely on my radar.
There was one first party game all year long that grabbed my interest. And so
Which one was that?
My Switch has kind of been Animal Crossing.
Yeah.
So
of course.
Yeah, I liked Animal Crossing a lot. All right, so this is a weird one. So,
yeah,
you could say that.
I'm so glad this found its way on the dock.
Yeah,
go ahead, Steven.
So Ubisoft, kind of, I don't even know how this happened, but I guess there was an interview or something. But this article comes from Polygon. It says not all Ubisoft PS4 games will work on PS5. Okay. All of Ubisoft's Xbox One games will be backwards compatible on Xbox Series X, but 8 PlayStation 4 titles will not make the jump to PlayStation 5, according to a blog post on Ubisoft Connect. Quote, most of our back catalog of games will have backward compatibility between next and current gen consoles, Ubisoft statements reads, with few exceptions. Those exceptions are Assassin's Creed Syndicate, Assassin's Creed Chronicles Trilogy Pack, Assassin's Creed Chronicles India, China, and Russia, Risk, which sucks because I love Risk, but I have the PS2 version, Star Trek Bridge Crew, Werewolves Within, and Space Junkies, the space-themed VR shooter. Owners of those games for PS4 will need to keep that console up and around if they want to keep playing. But it's not all bad news. Some of US games are blah, blah, blah. Okay, so that put everybody in a tizzy, saying, well, PlayStation put out a list of 10 games, which is now 9, which is going to be 8 soon, of that they said those are the only games that are not backwards compatible. So Andy, you did a little bit of research on your own. Mm-hmm. And what did you find about this?
Well, if you go to the Assassin's Creed Syndicate page on the PSN store and the website, mm-hmm. it says that the game is in fact playable, but it may have some errors if you're not at the current firmware on your PS5. So check that. So it seems like there's a disconnect here between what we mean by a backwards compatible game. I feel like if the CD goes or the DVD goes into the drive, the Blu-ray in the drive, and it does not boot, cannot read it, it is not backwards compatible. Like, I can't put a PS2 game in a PS5. It won't work.
Right.
But if the game starts and I can play it and it has some errors, it is still, in fact, backwards compatible.
Right.
But it's got some issues.
So what makes this whole story even more interesting is that mm-hmm. the next day after this, Ubisoft put out a statement, and I don't have it in front of me because I did not hyperlink that for myself, but essentially saying, hey, there may have been some errors in our reporting. We'll have more information on this soon. Essentially is what it was. So this is the second time now that there has been an issue, I believe both times with Ubisoft, if I remember correctly. Where they said something about, I think it was the 64K thing.
Right. There was a weird thing where it was like was it for Far Cry 6?
Yes.
I think it was Xbox Series X 4K with 60 FPS, and it was PS5 4K and 60 FPS. There was a weird.
It was 4K and 60 frames, and then 4K. Yeah,
I think it was and width, and it was like, well, what does that fucking mean?
Right, and then they were saying,
is it at the same time? Is it separately?
Right.
What are you trying to say?
I mean, I know this sounds like stupid, but like these are the things that people are fighting about because they're trying to rehash these console wars at this point. But that was another story that they came and they said, no, it's the same. It's sorry. Like we didn't.
Don't you know, Steven, that Ubisoft has it out for PlayStation 5? Mm-hmm. That they're in the deep pockets of Microsoft, right, and they're deep. Being paid, yep, to put out these negative stories to damage their reputation.
That's what it is.
And to make, yeah, sure that they fail on launch date.
Yep.
That's what I've been reading.
I understand that this is like kind of not a big deal and they have fucked up for the second time now with kind of the messaging around this. But like I said this in our Discord as well, but the optics around this is just still terrible for Sony. Like,
right,
you every single article that's come out about the Xbox Series consoles has been, yep, it works, it just works, like you don't have to worry about it, all the games, they just work. And it seems like every week we have one of these stories popping up on the Sony side that's just like, it works, asterisk, or it does this, asterisk, you know. And even if it's not true, like the optics of it for a more casual gamer or someone who doesn't keep up with every update on all of these stories, like, kind of sucks.
Yeah, and I think that's why they so feverishly get ahead of it and like try and recant and you know, fix the story, for lack of a better term. It's just it's a strange thing because nobody really knows, and you would expect that what you're getting from a publisher, even though what you're getting from the publisher is probably coming from somebody who doesn't even know the first thing about making games. It's just a PR person or like a social media person that got an email that says, hey, say this, or we're tweeting this out today. Okay, cool. Punch, 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 tweet. It does. It plays into those emotions. It plays into those optics. And it's just interesting to see because we don't know. Nobody knows how any of this is going to work.
The main issue here is, like, let's say we could have a report come out tomorrow that says, sorry guys, our bad, these games are functioning 100% to the fullest extent on PS5. You'll lose that in these headlines that grab more because they're more negative on the spin.
Right.
So that will get lost. That will hurt.
To your point, this article from Polygon, the pinnacle, mm-hmm, of journalism, was, mm-hmm, never updated to say that was taken.
Right, down. Right, right.
So it never said update. Sorry, just kidding. JK, LOL. Right. They know this one's the one that's getting the clicks. Yeah, just interesting stuff. Side note before we get into Taylor's next story. Did you see the Digital Foundry tweet or whatever? I forget who it was from, that set the world on fire about PlayStation and Series X. Did you see this one?
Oh, no. What do they say?
Basically saying, you know, embargo is almost up. We've been doing a lot of work behind the scenes, yada, yada. And basically saying that there are a lot of surprises alluding to the PlayStation 5 side.
Yes, I actually watched that clip.
Yeah.
Of them saying
that there are a lot of very curious, interesting things that Digital Foundry is going to have to say. And I wonder what that is, because, I mean, maybe it answers questions, maybe it creates more, but I feel like it might have something to do with backwards compatibility, 4K, maybe even 8K, because it says on the box 8K, which we don't even know what that means, for both the Series X and PS4 or PS5. So I don't know.
Just a made up number.
That's, yeah, I don't even know what it is. Like, it's going to be like some sort of upscaled yada yada, but like, how does,
oh,
it,
no,
how
do we do? Taylor, it's going to have an RDNA -0. So right, that's the PS5 is running off RDNA, of. It's like, yep, it's like the worst thing ever because it's not a full RDNA 2. So, yeah, know, that's what's going down, yep, in that department.
Speaking of DNA, let's get into the next story.
Oh, baby.
Yeah. This baby got me all hot and bothered.
Baby.
So, Timur Hussein from GameSpot had a pretty sizable interview with Gavin Moore from Bluepoint, talking about Demon's Souls PS5, and some of the changes and some of the similarities that you can kind of expect to see in the new game coming out with the new consoles. And holy shit, I'm so excited for this game. It's not even funny. There's a lot of really great information in here, but one of the biggest ones that I wanted to touch on was the fractured mode. So fractured mode is basically like a mirrored version of the game, where like enemy placements are kind of mixed up, the map is in reverse. So it's like just another level of challenge on top of that game.
Oh boy.
And I am just so ready for it. It's not even funny. In addition to that, they talked about a bunch of like cool filters that they're adding, you know, doing the Blue Point stuff, just like adding a lot of really amazing quality of life and extra layers of depth to a game without like really overshining what the original game did. And I'm very, very excited about this. So it sounds super cool. And it sounds like, Andy, you're right there with me.
Yeah. The other big thing that I got from this interview was there's a PS3 filter mode on this game.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
And a PS3 camera mode, and you can also on the fly switch the graphics modes between old and new while you're playing. And it takes me back to the Monkey Island remake from years ago when you can switch between the old and the new graphic style. And even though Blue Point was like, play the game with the new style because you put a lot of work in that, because, I mean, look at it, it's fucking amazing. But the temptation's there to play it in the old way with full 60 FPS just to see what it looks like and running smoother. But yeah, Taylor, this game, I feel, is the only thing that looks next gen when I look at it. 100%. And this is the first game I'm playing when PSA launches in a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Buzz makes a great point in chat as well. The Master Chief Collection actually added this as well for the Halo Anniversary games.
Yeah.
You can switch back and forth on the fly between the graphic styles, and they handled it really well. So if you can do it in a similar way where like with Halo, you could be aiming down sights and just like toggle the graphics one way or another, and it just instantly switches. And it's absolutely awesome.
Dope. Andy, hit us up with this next story.
Oh boy, we're talking about Bugsnax. We're talking about Bugsnax. Is the first official PSN Plus PS5 game. Oh boy. Oh my God. You guys. This is going to be huge. No. Listen. You've played Octodad before. These guys, they know weird and they know how to do it well. And this game, from the first time we saw it, we're all enchanted by it. And now it's coming free on PSN Plus. And I'm excited about that. And I feel it's a smart move because it's like, hey, here's a free game at launch. With your PS5.
Our second free game. Well,
right.
In theory, our 22nd free game, but the PlayStation 5 also comes with Astrobot.
Right.
Or Playroom or whatever that is.
Right. Very true. But we also got as well this week that Destruction All-Stars was delayed, but will be on PSN Plus when it launches in February of next year. That's kind of cool. I feel that game, we saw nothing about it, not even a single match, what the mechanics are, what the actual gameplay is like.
Yeah.
And it was like, this game comes out like in a month. What's it about? What can we do? And it was in the UI demo that they released like last week or so. There's the game. Are you gonna show us a thing about it? And I was like, hey, it's not coming out till February, but it's gonna be free. So that's $70 you can save and purchase Ratchet and Clank when that comes out next year.
Yeah, it got kicked down the road a little bit, but it's going to be, and I think this is going to help it in the same way that Rocket League got its help, you know? It's just going to be one of those things that, like, people are going to be more intrigued to try it because it's new, and it's got that arcade feel to it.
Right.
And, you know.
And you have, at least by then, a large swath of PS5 owners around February
or
to try
a
it out
decent
on PSN
size,
Plus.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, right. Yeah. Let's say you sell like, you know, a million or so a month on the low end. It's a decent amount of players that'll play it.
So I have a related question to this topic, since we kind of have a brief outline for PS5, PS Plus games. Do you guys think that games with gold has a similar lineup of next gen stuff that they're going to be ready to drop with? Because it always seems like they kind of lag behind with that, and they haven't really announced anything.
I think they aren't they like I feel like games with gold is like not a priority. Like I feel like it's all about Game Pass, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I've kind of felt that same way too. Is, you know, that they've kind of not given up, but they have put very minimal effort into that program now.
Yeah.
It's just hard to look at that program and feel like, oh wow, I'm getting like an Xbox OG game, when you have like the latest and greatest games, even some cases, indie games that are debuting on Game Pass.
Yeah. And, so and it's hard. Isn't it part of it now? Like if you get Game Pass, don't you have gold anyway? Like I don't like.
Only if you get Ultimate.
Mm-hmm. Right. I don't know. It's a weird thing
because I feel like Microsoft, it's Game Pass leads the charge. Games with gold is like, okay, it's a consolation prize. PlayStation, it's all about the PS Plus offerings, and then what they add to PS Now is like, eh, here you go, here's some fun games that came out like 10 years ago you can play on PS Now. Mm. So it's like a reverse.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
So we were rapidly approaching Cyberpunk 2077's release, and therefore we rapidly approached another Cyberpunk 2077 delay notice.
Oh my god.
CD Projekt Red put out their, you know, at this point infamous yellow placard on Twitter saying,
"I have PTSD."
I know it's scary, but it is what it is at this point. They are kicking the can down the road a little bit more now. This is now kicked into December. I believe it was December 10th. Yes, December 10th. Basically, their whole reasoning for all of this is that they want to have as much parity between versions of the game, whether you're playing on current gen or next gen, or PC using the 30 cards or the 20 cards, or even the 10, you know, 50 Ti, you know, whatever it is. They want as much parity as possible, and I believe they said they were making 7 versions of the game essentially, which is ridiculous. But that's kind of like what happens now with development, and they're kicking the can down the road. And it's 3 weeks, which may not seem like a lot to you know, your average person, but it looks pretty shitty for them because they were really planting that flag on this most recent date. I believe it was the 19th.
Did you see the one guy that was like, "All right, I'm gonna take vacation from work. Yeah. Is it gonna come out?" And they were like, "Yes."
Yeah.
And then they were like, "Our bad."
Yeah, there was another one that was like, it was in the same vein. It was like, do I have, you know, your word? And they're like, yes. And they actually responded to it like much later and said, you know, can we?
Would anyone notice if we deleted this?
Yeah. Would anybody notice if we deleted this? Too? I mean, they get that there's obviously a humor to be found in all of this, but at the same time, like, this is a cautionary tale of what not to do, especially when you're crossing generations at this point. Like, if you knew that you were going to be making a cross-generational game, I feel like release dates should be the absolute last thing that you do for that game. Because the game itself, even if nobody knew when this game was coming out, and I believe the game opened up for pre-orders in 2018,
mm-hmm.
even if nobody knew when this game was coming out, even as of today, the hype train would still be what it is, period. Because you could still show the same things about the game. You could still, and people could say, "Oh shit, it must be close. Look at how awesome this looks." Blah blah blah. And nobody wouldn't be the one the wiser if it came out on December 10th. If you announced on Thanksgiving that, "Hey, it's coming out December 10th. Oh shit, great! I already had my pre-order, and now, you know, your last chance to pre-order it or whatever." I just think that it's a cautionary tale. Like, unless your game is ready and you could ship it out, just show us more about the game, but you don't need to tell us when it's coming out. I understand you got to tell your investors and whatever, but I mean, do you at this point? Like, it's CD Projekt Red, like, or CD Projekt. You know what you're getting with them, right? You're going to get a hit. It's going to happen. The pre-order date is there. I don't know, man. I feel like we're due for a change.
Yeah. I think the most bizarre thing about this whole situation, and I may need to be fact checked on this, but I don't think I've ever seen a game get delayed after going gold. Like, they made such a huge deal about going gold, getting that final master. And everyone was like, okay, yes, finally, like November 17th is the day. Like, we're finally going to get, or 19th is the day we're finally going to get it. And then they delay it even after that. Like,
yeah.
Super bizarre.
Yeah. I mean, this all feels kind of like a fool me once, shame on you sort of situation where, like, I understand that it's unprecedented times we're living in. It's harder to get these things done in a timely fashion. And you're setting goals and you miss your target once, twice, but now we're like three times this is happening. And it shakes the confidence a little bit of what's going on. Like, well, now you're saying it's pushed back three more weeks. Can we trust that? Like, are we confident that it's going to happen on that date? Like, I understand, like, at this point, if it gets pushed a fourth time, it's going to be like, riots in the streets.
I think
over this game.
What they've all but cleared up is that this is not the game that's being delayed. It's the day one patch, and instead of, you know, going gold means the game is content complete, but it still needs some polish. It still needs, you know, some fixing. And,
right, but is how gold is it? If it's, you can launch a game and say, all right, this game is like it passed the sniff test to a great extent. It represents what we want in this game. We need some polish, but we can add that in after the fact.
You're gonna
bump it back.
The issue,
right? And
current gen is the issue. The issue is that they need to optimize for current gen because it's a beefy game. Like it, I mean, you look at it running, it's gorgeous. It's a beautiful game. It's a showcase for what high end PC gaming is and what next gen consoles are. That's what this game is. And the fact that they're even trying to get this running on current gen is, and I really honestly believe this. The only reason why they're still putting this out on current gen is because they know it would be a goddamn shitstorm if they didn't. They know people would lose their fucking minds if this game did not come out on
It was announced so long ago. It was going to be a current gen game regardless.
I know. But that's what I mean. Like, yeah.
I don't know how true that is, though, Steve. Do you remember in the Night City Wire, it was not the most recent one, but the one before that, where they announced the PC specs? Like, that thing can run on, like, kind of a potato, like, better than what current gen is running on. So I really don't think it's current gen that's holding it back. I'm trying to pull up the system requirements right now.
Well,
minimum requirements... Intel Core i5 3570K or an AMD FX 8310, graphics card, and an NVIDIA GTX 780 or an AMD Radeon RX 470. Like,
but yeah,
that's like a $500 PC right there.
Right, and I believe that the current gen is better than that. And that's kind of where I'm going with it. Like, you. If you're just playing with sliders, you could get pretty much anything to run anywhere. I think it's more about the word they use is optimized. It's not will it run, it's how will it run. And, you know, when I play, just to go back to the beginning of the episode, playing Phasmophobia looks like potato. It looks like a potato game. It's not graphically or in any way, shape, or form intensive in any way. Yet it jumps up my CPU usage by 30%. It kills my frames in half at times because it's not optimized. It's poorly optimized. So they could be looking at this and saying, "Hey, we're overheating current gen consoles because we're not optimizing this the right way." Or, "Hey, people are going to be." All the video we're showing, it looks like this because it's running on next gen. And then when people buy it, it's going to look like this. Is this what we really want to show them? Do we really want to show them the game dipping into, you know, 16 frames a second territory, 20 frames? Is that something we want to show? And like, how could we fix this? Well, I could do this, this, and this. Great. How long does that take? It'll take 2 weeks. Okay. We'll see if I can buy you three. Like, I feel like that's like as simple as the conversation was. Obviously we're not going to know. I think they said that there's a massive documentary about this game being filmed as the game is being built. So
is it going to mention how the employees weren't aware of the delay until it was announced?
Yeah, that was another thing. No, nobody knew the game was delayed until it was announced. It's just a bizarre situation.
I have a question about that. Do you guys think that they were like breathing a sigh of relief when they read that? Or do you think they were shitting their pants because that means three more weeks of working their ass off?
No, actually it was disappointment because they were so excited for people to start playing it. Like most of the people that came out publicly and talking about it were like, they were sad because they just want people to play the game. And yeah. I'm sure it's not even the core team that's working on these optimizations, right? It's going to be your porting teams, your scaling teams, your whoever's working on the optimization and those different aspects. I'm sure it's a completely different team than like your artists. Your artists are done. They haven't worked in 3 months, you know, 3-4 months. Right now it's all programmers, optimize, you know, whatever, and your marketing team and whatnot. It's just a weird situation, but like, again, like I said, lesson learned, don't do this shit. Just when you're ready to release the game, that's when you should tell people when the game's coming out. I firmly believe that. Like, it's not the same as movies. Nobody's pre-ordering except for like the massive Avengers movies. Nobody's pre-ordering the next Star Wars ticket 2 years in advance. Gaming is way different. It's just different. You could announce your game. That's fine. Announce it. Show us stuff when it's coming. Who's doing that right now? There's a game that's doing it right now that we still don't know when it's coming out, but they show us little snippets here and there. What game is that? Fuck. And it doesn't even have like a release, a window. It'll come to me eventually, but anyway.
Oh, also the fact that developers are delaying their games because they'll get trampled by Cyberpunk when it comes out in December. It's like, well, we'll move ours till next year, I guess.
Yeah, we'll just stop being a little bitch about it. just, you know, commit or go home, you know? Do you have a hype zone?
Well, you know what? I was searching far and wide for a decent hype zone, but I have a serious one for a change.
Oh, my. Okay.
And I think that's...
Serious hype.
Yeah. The DualSense controller.
Oh, my.
Okay. I have been hearing so many good things about this thing. How... when you're holding it and you walk from, let's say, a flat surface to glass or metal or sand, you can feel it in the controller. And I saw a thing just now, and I wish I played sports games, but for NBA 2K21, you'll feel the collision of a player on you based on the thrust and their strength and their size in your controller. That is nutty. To me,
you know, we'll see if any of that matters.
Right. I listen, it's nice. It was like when you first played 1-2 Switch, when the Switch came out, it was like, I can count the marbles in the Joy-Con. It's like, whoa, the future is now. But yeah. Then no one takes advantage of it because it's like, okay, well, it's a nice gimmick. But I'm really hoping people utilize, because a lot of thought went into it apparently. And even the microphone on that thing is pretty amazing that I saw.
I hate that there's a microphone.
I bet it's going to be real cool when you play Horizon and you pull that bow back for the first time, and then it's never going to be real cool ever again.
Oh, wait.
My bet.
Here's some hype for you guys. The DualSense works on the Switch and the PS3.
And the X Cloud.
Yeah. That's your hype zone right there.
There it is. all right. So before we get into the mailbag, where we're going to kick it to the chat and, of course, our mailbag from our Discord. Before we do that, let's get into the question of the week, the Facebook question of the week. So chat, if you're watching, please put your questions in the chat. We'll read them in a moment. But we are going to get into the question of the week. And the question of the week was, which video game franchise are you most thankful for? Franchises? Whatever. It's just weird. Reads weird. Okay, so Veronica responds, Bioshock and Fatal Frame.
Ooh,
Fatal Frame is the video game that got me into gaming, and Bioshock was the first game that I played start to finish without taking a long break in between. Mm-hmm. I still remember times with both of these games very vividly.
Wow, great choices.
Josh says great the choices. Souls series.
Mm.
Matt Murray, a.k.a. Missed Enough, says Mega Man, no question.
Mm-hmm.
Kati, or Katty, says Persona.
Mm.
Thorn, our very own Thorn, says The King of Fighters.
Nice.
And Perger here, Taylor, says The Elder Scrolls.
Very nice.
Indeed. Albob says The Legend of Zelda, which is going to come up a few times here. Daniel says NHL, which I get, totally.
Okay.
CT Dub says Ratchet and Clank. Playing video games with my dad will always be one of the biggest highlights of my childhood, and this is the one franchise he enjoyed watching the most. Honorable mentions to Mario Party, since you could actually play, and Spyro, a close second enjoy of watching. Vegas Girl on Fire says Zelda faux show. And then Anthony Marino says The Legend of Zelda.
Wow, a lot of Zelda fans in that group.
And what about you, Andy?
So, you know, I would go with like a Silent Hill or a horror franchise at this point, but sure. I'm going to say Legacy of Kain.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one.
That game is just, that is a Shakespeare of a series. It is so well written, so well acted, and it was too short-lived. Mm-hmm. I demand more of those games that we'll never get, what it seems. But yeah.
My answer may shock everybody, and I need everybody to be sitting down. Chat, make sure you're sitting down, please.
Is that a cat game? If it's a fucking cat game.
No. As you know, one of my favorite games this gen is Apex Legends. Everybody knows this. And I could take the easy way out and say I'm thankful for Apex Legends. That's not who I'm thankful for. Of course I am, but that's not the one. I hope everybody's sitting down. The game franchise that I am most thankful for is Halo.
Ah. Oh.
I have only beaten two Halo games.
You sound so thankful then.
But I am so thankful for Halo, because without Halo, we would not have the first-person shooter renaissance that we had that would then create things like Destiny, Call of Duty to be what we know it today, Titanfall. And of course, all of the 6 degrees of separation leads us to Apex Legends.
Mm-hmm.
Without Halo setting the bar for first-person shooters and multiplayer first-person shooting, we would not have what we have today in Warzone, in Apex Legends, etc., etc. So that is what I'm thankful for. All right. Let's kick it to the chat. Misenuff says Elder Scrolls was a close second for him. He poured so much into that series over the years, of course, of course, of course.
I have a story that Misenuff wanted us to cover real quick.
Indeed.
So this is from Destructoid.com.
Okay.
Orwell's Animal Farm to receive video game adaptation. I'm sure you two are very familiar with George Orwell's classic Animal Farm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So apparently this is getting a game release where you can be an animal. It is an adventure style game that is, its goal is to immerse players in Orwell's story. You choose which of the animal's wishes you'll follow and whose will be ignored or sidelined.
Interesting.
And it sounds like it has multiple endings to kind of decide the fate of the farm. Hmm. Not a lot of art and stuff out yet. They just have one teaser trailer. I'm not going to lie. Not interested whatsoever.
Okay.
Well, you know what they say. All games are equal, but some games are more equal than others.
Indeed.
Oh, it's also launching on PC and mobile.
Brilliant.
Okay.
Mailbag, Mikey Kirsch, Dr. Kirsch has a novel for us. And I'm just going to.
He did his dissertation on the fucking in Discord.
Okay. All right. This is Mikey Kirsch now. Quote.
Oh my God. It's
like a all right. I have a question for the podcast, and it's a long one. So I'm muting Buzz Killington after I post so I don't have to see or hear his dumb words. Fair. Cyberpunk has been delayed again. The developers this time are citing the desire to optimize the game for a myriad of platforms that it will be releasing on. The delay is only 3 weeks, but this delay comes after the announcement that the game has gone gold. Obviously, the internet did what it does best, and it immediately became extremely polarized in its response to the news. The angry people got extremely angry, and they have once again been reports of death threats directed to CD Projekt. On the other end, there seems to be an overwhelming willingness to wait this out because it means the game will be better. Now, let me be clear. I am looking forward to buying and playing Cyberpunk. It remains my most anticipated game of the year. I consider myself the type of person who generally accepts delays because I want to give the developers time to make the game that they want. I appreciate when scope and creation is expanded for the sake of fulfilling a creative purpose and making a better product. I also am in full support of, wherever applicable, decreasing the total amount of crunch that tends to burn people out. With all that being said, I am incredibly frustrated with the announcement of this delay. It seems like the general attitude about game delays is that the studios that delay them should be immune from criticism about said delays because of the reasons I've mentioned above. That doesn't sit well with me. Cyberpunk was supposed to come out in April, and this is the third time it has been delayed. And I want to make something clear. It's the third time it's been delayed this year, not total. Clearly, the time frame on this game was extremely mismanaged. Clearly, they need to work on their messaging. Obviously, they shouldn't have given a release date that they originally intended. So I guess my question is, when is it okay to voice criticism about game delays? If I called up all my emote clients or my chiropractic patients and told them I wouldn't be able to provide them a service for 6 months and then call them again and say I needed 2 more months, it would be viewed as completely unacceptable. I think this stands for most other work fields. In most cases, we try to be understanding about delays in any other industry, but they hardly become standard practice. Should video game development be exempt from this? Is there anything that should be done to help avoid this in the future? What do you guys think? Taylor, let's start with you.
Sure. So there's a lot to unpack with this. I think the biggest thing here is I think it is totally natural and fine to be frustrated that a game that you are super stoked about is getting delayed. I think that's like a totally normal feeling to feel there. I also think that what Mike said earlier, that it's also good to let people kind of delay as they need to put out the best game possible. Both of those things can be true without like contradicting each other. So you can be like fine with someone delaying their game, but also frustrated that, you know, this game that you were planning on playing for the rest of the year, you know, gets pushed back 3 more weeks. I do think his comparison there at the end around different industries is a little bit of a stretch, just because it's not an exact analog of like Mike as a chiropractor isn't creating a product that he's then releasing. Like, people are coming to him and paying him and saying, okay, crack my back now. Like, I think the analog there isn't quite in line.
Right. It would be more like, hey, the game is out. I want to buy this game. Okay, great. I'll take your money, but I don't have any games in stock.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Come back.
So I don't think like, and I don't think he was intending this way, but that final section makes it seem like CD Projekt like owes us this game or owes us anything, when ultimately they don't. Like, this is their vision, this is their game, and you can buy it or you can choose not to when it ultimately comes out. And I think a lot of people, though frustrated with these delays, it's not going to be enough for them to say, you know what, screw Cyberpunk, I'm never going to play it.
Right.
So I think it's totally fine to be frustrated, and it's fine to like voice that frustration that you were excited to, you know, play the game. But there's a fine line between like just being frustrated, but like, oh, okay, three more weeks, and, you know, sending the studio death threats, as some people have resorted to.
Andy?
I'm going to focus on one key point on Mikey's thesis here. And that is his actual question that says, when is it okay to voice criticism about game delays? I think even to zoom out, Mike, it is always okay to voice criticism. And in terms of when, anytime, as long as that critique is constructive and well thought out and isn't toxic or ill-intended or just flat out mean or being an asshole for an asshole's sake, or even entitled, I think if you can voice your critique in a constructive way, that's totally fine. I feel, to your earlier point, that people think that because the game will be better if we delay it, it creates an artificial shield that protects it from real criticism. And sometimes when we have things like death threats that are tossed in the mix, those can drown out actual valid critique and concern, which I don't like, because, you know, most people want to have an actual conversation about issues with regards to game delays. And, you know, with regards to crunch and work ethic and why is it being delayed so many times? What's going on here? I feel, as far as when goes, always, and anytime is always fair game, as long as you approach it from a place of, you know, you do want this game to come out, you're excited for it, and if it's not a blind fanboy, I'm going to murder your family if I don't get this game like tomorrow sort of thing, then yeah, go for it. But I don't think the excuse of, listen, the game's going to come out, it's going to be great, stop your bitching, it'll be better, just sit in a corner and take it, I'm not about that either.
Right.
I think as a consumer, you're allowed to voice a healthy opinion on something.
Yeah, like I said, like I think the criticism here isn't a Cyberpunk question. I think it is a general game development question. I think we need to reevaluate how the cycle of advertisement, right? The cycle of hype for a game, for lack of a better term. Because the cycle is starting earlier and earlier now, right? And there are a few exceptions to that. Like Apex Legends, I'm bringing it up again. But that game was shown off, announced, and released the same day. Granted, it's free. It didn't need to have pre-orders, yada, yada, yada. It got people intrigued. They're like, oh, cool, let me get in here and see what this is about. I'm not saying do that. But the other one was Fallout 4. Fallout 4 had 4 months between announcement and release. 4 months. The game was finished and was just in polished state. It was gold, and it was in polished state for those 4 months before it was released to the public. It can be done. It's a matter of what you're gonna communicate to the public versus your investors, right? Because in some cases with pre-orders, the public are kind of your investors at this point. You know, in Kickstarter, like some games that get Kickstarted, they are games that are announced that they say, hey, our target release date is 3 years from now. That's an investment. You're investing your money in that product. And if that product continues to get delayed and delayed and delayed, that's kind of shitty because you're giving them your money ahead of time, right? But I think, you know, the industry is so predicated. It's so, not predicated, it's driven by pre-sale numbers that is what's doing the disservice to the developers that are putting in the hours, that are saying, let's hit this mark. We told people this mark, the pre-orders are coming. You know, that's where we want to hit. That's for our quarterly financials, this, that, the other thing. I just think it would behoove them to say to their investors, we have a massive game that we're not ready to show people yet, that we're targeting for Q whatever year. and then they say, hey, we're pretty close to getting gold. Let's announce it. And then you could start the clock from there. Or you can do what Cyberpunk did, but never say a release date. So people are like, when the fuck is this thing coming out? When is it coming out? What is happening? Let those be the questions. And then they could say, well, it's not ready. So we're not going to tell you when it's coming out because it's not ready to be released. And I think people would respect that. Nintendo does that shit all the time.
You know? I think no matter right. how you slice this, like regardless of whether you're in support of the delay or not or whatever, like it's pretty easy to tell that this project has been mismanaged from a like timetable standpoint, from a internal deadline standpoint, like expectation standpoint. Like there's been a lot of mismanagement from the internal team, and so I think that's led to frustration from like the marketing department getting mixed messages and having to delay things from fans, like all of that. And based off of some of the reporting that's gone around this project, it sounds like there may need to be some internal shakeups at CDPR to like kind of correct these things. I absolutely love them as a studio, but you know, there's very obviously like some misaligned visions here. And I think it's okay to voice that and like be frustrated with that.
Let's also not forget that this game was supposed to come out at the time where the country was shutting down, like most of the world was shut down.
Sure.
So, I mean, the first two delays, I'm like, okay, yeah, I guess, you know, that makes sense. Like everybody had to learn how to do this on the fly, right? Everybody, all games were affected this year. All of them. I'm sure there are games that were going to be announced and released this year that were just never announced because they can't get completed. Most likely on the Nintendo side, right? Like just based on their silence all year with you know, for their bigger titles. And I think that this was kind of an anomaly for that situation, but the fact that it's happened so often, just that even this gen, not even just this year, I think is more indication that they need to reevaluate how they announce and release these titles.
I mean, we forgot to mention that even Far Cry 6 was just recently announced being delayed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the one for the bucket. But I just hope that it makes me wonder when this will get in reviewers' hands before its actual release. That's what I'm most curious about. It seems like it's a fairly beefy game from what I understand.
Yeah.
And it's going to take some time for them to actually play the game. So could they at least play what the gold version was?
Probably, again, yeah.
In what state was that in where they couldn't confidently even launch that version? And I want to add one last thing here to this to wrap it up. There's been a lot of press on this game between its delays and its internal dialogue with its own employees, how things are being communicated to them with regard to delays and so forth. And I really hope that when this game comes out, that people can actually judge it for what it is and not for all the stories and the drama that's surrounding it.
Yeah.
Because it could be easy to see an issue in the game and say, okay, that's a problem, but it was delayed 4 times and all the poor employees went through so much. Maybe I can pull some punches in my review or my criticism. I feel it's a minor concern, and I hope that when it comes out, it can be judged on its own merits and not what it was in the headline news over the last like 6 to 8 months, as it were.
Right. Yeah, and that's kind of the dream. That's the hope. All right, guys, that is going to bring us to the end of the show. Thank you so much for your question, Mike. Thank you for everybody's question. Thank you, everybody, for being here. If you want to follow us on social media, we are at NDS Podcast. I am at BatChild27. Andy's at PantsGuy. And Taylor is at It's Perger. If you want to join our Facebook group, it's facebook.com/groups/DS Podcasts. Our Twitch channel is twitch.tv/DualScreens Streams, which you can watch us record the show live when we record it. And you can also find the video on demand on youtube.com/DualScreensTV. And of course, the show posts on Monday on your favorite podcast service. So if you are watching this video and you'd rather listen to the audio, you can do so on any one of those podcast services. Thank you to Zazu Pitts of Sour Note Productions for our theme song. Thank you, Matt Murray, aka Missed Enough, for our logo and overlays. Thank you, Andrew Douglas, for our cartoon art, which we may have to get a new character designed. And you can follow him at Angimoto, A-N-G-I-M-O-T-O. If you want to send us an email, you can do so at feedback@ndspodcast.com, or you can join our Patreon at patreon.com/ndspodcast and join our Discord with any one of your contributions on Patreon, get you into the Discord. And remember, for the year of 2020, even if you could only join for 1 month and then you leave, you will be in the Discord for the whole year. It's a little perk that we gave because of COVID and financial situations, yada yada. We just wanted to do that. All right, Andy, is there anything you want to tell the kids before we go?
Yes, Steven. Huh. You are all my children now.
That's fair. Perger, Taylor, thank you for joining us. How do you have anything you want to tell everybody before we go?
No, thank you for having me. I appreciate it, and look forward to doing this some more.
Absolutely. Thank you, viewers. Thank you, listeners. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Taylor. And as always, please be excellent to each other.